Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to the 133rd edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome back, Laura. You were on vacation to Maine last week. We're happy to have you back.
Oh, it's good to be back, Dennis.
Laura, it was a heck of a week for politics in Iowa. Most of the action was at the Iowa State Fair last week, which is, of course, always the great gathering spot for presidential candidates the summer ahead of the caucuses. Now, we're going to talk about all of those candidates. But first, we have news about the leader of the GOP PAC, Donald Trump. As we go on the air live on this Monday night, the Atlanta prosecutor investigating whether the former president and his associates broke the law when they tried to overturn Trump's 2020 election loss in Georgia, is presenting her case to a grand jury as we speak. Laura, whatever happens here, and everybody expects indictments, this is going to mean his fourth indictment, Trump's fourth indictment. We've never seen anything like this in presidential politics.
No, I mean, it's really so unprecedented. And I was thinking about it over the weekend that how many political careers have ended when someone was charged with even one crime? And so we have now three and very likely soon to be four indictments. The people who were testifying before the grand jury this afternoon included the former Georgia state elections official, the former lieutenant governor. So these were people really in a position to know what was happening behind the scenes during those crucial days between the Electoral College, when the Electoral College met in December of 2020, and the events of January 6th.
Among those who testified today to the grand jury, former GOP Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan of Georgia said he thinks it's time for the GOP to pivot away from Trump in order to win. He called Trump the worst candidate ever in the history of the party. That assessment is not agreed to by the vast majority of Trump supporters.
It isn't. But when you look at what's going on in Georgia, I mean, the Republicans have a trifecta there. They've won a lot of statewide elections. And so for Donald Trump to lose, not only for him to lose the Georgia in the 2020 presidential election, but then a lot of Republicans down there feel that all of his talk about fraud and problems and mismanagement discouraged people from coming out to vote in those January 2021 special elections that they had for those two Senate seats that Democrats picked up. And that is what gave Democrats control of the U.S. Senate.
If anything happens during this broadcast, and again, we are live on this Monday night, we will break in and bring it to you. But we have other things to discuss, including former President Trump and the other GOP candidates who came to the Iowa State Fair last week. And of course, the former president, he just ignored Governor Reynolds and he ignored the Des Moines Register's political soapbox site. He did his own thing when he walked around the fair on Saturday.
I mean, he does know stagecraft. He worked in show business for a long time. The visuals that he got, I'm sure, were just what his campaign wanted. It looked like an enormous crowd of people was there to see him. I saw somebody saying that the Secret Service was blocking one of the main entrances to the fair. Of course, Saturday is traditionally one of the busiest days at the fair. And so there was a big bottleneck. And this person was complaining that, oh, they made it look like there was a huge crowd of people there to see Trump. It was really just a lot of people who couldn't get in, who were trying to use their tickets to get into the fairgrounds. But in any case, I know people who tried to get in to the place where he had his event. It was absolutely packed. They couldn't get anywhere close, even to see him raise his pork chop in the air.
I was about to mention that. He did stop off at the Iowa pork tent, and he got a big ovation when he held up a pork chop on a stick. But perhaps I'd even get a big ovation if I held one up. I'm not sure.
And I think he bought a round of drinks for a lot of people. They had a MAGA special for $24 there.
Asked if he intended to overturn the 2020 election, he responded, you know the answer. Well, his answer is no. Everybody so far, grand jury wise, is saying yes.
That's right. And I mean, as the former Vice President Mike Pence pointed out when he was asked about this, that the Trump campaign filed a lot of lawsuits in a lot of states and none of them were successful in changing the results or uncovering any significant amount of fraud that could have determined the outcome in that state.
Well, Mr. Trump did what Mr. Trump does. Ron DeSantis was there at the governor's interview site, and Mr. DeSantis did not have a particularly great day on Saturday at the Iowa State Fair. He was booed and heckled.
Well, and they tried, they're both really alpha male types. And so the DeSantis campaign, or rather the super PAC, Never Back Down, which seems to be functioning like a campaign staff for Ron DeSantis for all practical purposes, they rolled out a lot more endorsements on Friday. They announced county chairs in all 99 counties, some new legislative endorsers, and he planned to come to the state fair on Saturday, flanked with a lot of the Iowa legislators who are supporting Ron DeSantis. Of course, the former president showed up with several members of Congress from Florida who have endorsed Trump rather than their own state governor. So I think there was a lot of competing efforts to show dominance. And certainly some of the Trump supporters who were there on Saturday were relentlessly heckling Governor DeSantis.
Right. If Trump is going after any particular candidate, he ignores virtually all of them. It's DeSantis. He takes every step he can at every appearance to denigrate Ron DeSantis.
He does. And he also managed, you know, he showed up, as he often does, he sucks up all the oxygen in the room, all the attention's on him. And I think he was only on site for less than 2 hours, and he turned around and went home. Ron DeSantis was there for basically the whole day, but Trump still got a lot of the news coverage instead of what could have been a day with a lot of positive media about Ron DeSantis. But also, I mean, nobody expects the same amount of retail politics from Donald Trump, because that's just not what he does. I mean, when he showed up at the Iowa State Fair in 2015, he brought a helicopter. You know, he just is, like I said, a master of stagecraft. Whereas with Ron DeSantis, people are always looking now, scrutinizing how is he going to do with mingling with people, with making conversation with people. And he's not the most comfortable in that field. There are other candidates who are far more comfortable talking with ordinary people.
We are going to quickly go down the list of who spoke briefly at the state fair. So let's start with Nikki Haley. These are all on Saturday again, the very latest day that these candidates have been out there. She said she is not against gay marriage. She also said she does not support transgender student athletes. It's important to help women who have abortions. She was kind of all over the place here.
Well, I want to clarify. So as part of her stump speech, she brought up the fact of in her words, that the women's issue of our time is protecting girls' sports from transgender athletes. The other comments that you mentioned that were very newsworthy, that's because she took questions. Not all of the candidates are doing the Des Moines Register soapbox, and some of them are just delivering their regular stump speech, but she really took quite a lot of questions. She spoke, she only gave probably 8 or 9 minutes of her stump speech. And so she was asked about somebody asked her, why are you against gay marriage? And she said, what made you think I'm against gay marriage? I think people should live how they want. And then when she was asked about abortion, she said she's trying to strike a middle ground of let's not be divisive. She said she's pro-life. She doesn't judge people who are pro-choice. And she feels that what to her seems like a compromise position that I don't think many pro-choice people would accept is that let's agree that we're not going to prosecute any women who have an abortion, and let's agree to let states decide for themselves. Of course, that's not something that is, there is never going to be consensus on that issue in our country.
One of the more intriguing candidates, Vivek Ramaswamy, was there on Saturday. He called for a revival of patriotism, then did, and you like this, an impromptu performance of Lose Yourself by Eminem.
So during Governor Reynolds' fairside chat, she's been asking all of the candidates, and it's real softball questions. I mean, she's not asking anyone any real probing questions. And often it seems like she's trying to ask them exactly the question that they want to answer to talk about something that they perceive as their strength on the campaign trail. But she does ask all of them, what's your favorite walkout music? And then during the ensuing minutes before the end of their time, her staff go and locate that song and play it. So he said he's always liked Eminem's song Lose Yourself, which the governor wasn't even familiar with. And when the staff found it and started playing it, he just spontaneously started rapping. Apparently, when he was in college, this was a song he used to perform from time to time. But what I thought was really interesting about his speech was that he is positioning himself as a young person, a millennial who can appeal to millennials. But really, the messages that he's giving are much more tailored, I think, to appeal to the older voters, which frankly is what the majority of Iowa caucus goers are.
Let's buzz through a few of these others. The Reverend Ryan Binkley was there on Saturday. He said, God has a plan for our country. We're in a broken place. He did not indicate what that plan was. Apparently, God has not talked to him.
Well, he, you know, and he just can't get any oxygen. I mean, there are so many people who are getting more attention than he is. He's trying to do, he's going around and speaking to groups of 10, 12, 15 people. And he does have some ideas that nobody else is talking about. He did bring up during his time on the soapbox wanting to go after pharmaceutical companies. He talked about an agenda for urban America. This is something he says in his stump speeches, that Democrats won 46 out of the 50 largest cities in America, and he would like to help make Republican candidates more competitive in America's areas, which really isn't something that you hear many Republicans talk about.
Yes, there were even some Democrats there on Saturday. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. pledged to restore middle-class prosperity. He's getting some interesting publicity because of his father, and he is perceived as a crank on vaccines. He's just an interesting candidate.
Well, he kind of stepped on his own message a little bit. His speech at the soapbox was very much, it was a critique of corporate America. It was talking about the pipelines. He spent a lot of time on eminent domain and the CO2 pipelines that people don't want. He talked about pharma. But then, speaking to a journalist, somebody asked him whether he would sign a bill that banned all abortions after 15 weeks or 20 weeks. And he said he would. And that ended up dominating a lot of the news coverage of his visit to the fair. And of course, that is not a message that's going to help him appeal to any Democratic voters in a primary. I mean, the number of Democrats who are active participants in a primary or caucus who support abortion bans is just negligible at this point. So I felt that he was trying to make a case against, he didn't really talk about President Biden, but he was sort of trying to position himself as a candidate of the left. And then that didn't really help taking that question.
And Marianne Williamson, also a Democratic candidate, said she would declare a climate emergency, repair damage done by corporations, implement universal health care, cancel student loans. She has virtually no chance.
Right. And she did run for president in 2019, and I saw her speak a number of times, and this was very much her agenda. I mean, universal health care, lots of taking on corporate power. She said a line that I thought was effective. She said that, like FDR, when he said about the corporate interests and the banking interests who hated what he was doing during the New Deal, and he said, "I welcome their hatred." And that's what she said, that she welcomes their hatred. But no, people are not really interested. I don't hear a lot of Iowa Democrats talking about those candidates. Of course, President Biden isn't going to come campaign here because under the DNC rules, they would be sanctioned. Candidates would be sanctioned for campaigning in a state that's not on the early calendar.
So on Saturday, Mike Pence was not at the fair. He had been there on Thursday, but he said in Ankeny on Saturday, he cannot recall any instance when former President Trump told him he knew he, Trump, had lost the 2020 election. That is going to play a big part in the indictments against Trump, because one of the ideas is he knew he'd lost the election, but tried to overturn it anyway.
Well, yes, and certainly the prosecutors, the special counsel, is trying to make the case that Trump knew he lost the election, although of what I've been told by attorneys that it's not necessary to prove that he knew he lost the election. I mean, you can think that the election was stolen from you. You can say it was stolen from you, but that doesn't give you the right to engage in a criminal conspiracy, which is what he is alleged to have done. Of course, that he'll have his day in court to talk about that. But so they don't necessarily have to prove intent. I thought it was also interesting. Jamie Dupree, who's a congressional reporter, said that Mike Pence was on one of the Sunday shows this week, and he said that the Senate parliamentarian did not inform him about any fake elector documents, which is different from email records show that the Senate parliamentarian was emailing on January 2nd or January 3rd, was emailing the vice president's staff to talk about this fake elector scheme. So not sure what was going on there. The fake electors are a big part of that indictment related to attempts to overturn the 2020 election.
And then very quickly on Thursday at the Register's political soapbox at the fair, Pence had to defend his actions on January 6th, 2021, when someone in the fair crowd accused him of treason on that day. That someone was a Democrat trying to troll Pence, but Pence answered it.
He did. I mean, I thought that he handled himself well during the soapbox. Again, some candidates used all their time for a stump speech, but he left quite a bit of time to answer questions. And that was one. And some people started booing. They didn't like the question. And he said, it's basically, it's a legitimate question and that he was happy to answer it. Whereas during Governor DeSantis's fair site, he didn't do the soapbox box, but during his fair site chat, when he was getting heckled a little bit, the governor spoke up and basically told people to quiet down, but he didn't really engage with any of the people. So I thought that Mike Pence, that was a moment that probably doesn't hurt him. I mean, his problem is that there just aren't that many Iowa Republicans who are interested in what he's offering right now.
And finally, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum was there earlier in the week, as was Larry Elder, as was Miami Mayor Francis Suarez, as was businessman Perry Johnson. They all had their standard speeches, and none of them really are going anywhere.
No, I mean, it was all very similar to the speeches they gave at the Lincoln dinner. Doug Burgum, really, he talks a lot about his biography, the working class jobs he did, and he wants to focus on energy and national security, but he didn't take any questions. And I find that that's usually the most interesting part of these state fair appearances.
There is still more to come to the governor's site at the state fair on Tuesday. That's tomorrow, as we go live on Monday night. Asa Hutchinson, Ryan Binkley again, Tim Scott. Friday, Perry Johnson, Will Hurd, and then at the soapbox, Will Hurd on Friday, and Chase Oliver and Asa Hutchinson. They're all going to be there, but again, most of them are really sidebars.
Yes, but I think Tim Scott missed an opportunity, honestly, by not doing the soapbox. I know that his campaign advisors wanted to have him avoid unscripted questions where he might get a hostile question. And during these, now that I've watched the fairside chats that Governor Reynolds has been doing, it's clear she's not going to ask anybody a question that makes them uncomfortable. So I understand why he chose to do that and not the soapbox, but I think it was a missed opportunity. I don't think there's really that much of a downside for people to get that kind of exposure and let ordinary Iowans ask them a question.
It is 16 and a half after the hour. This is KHOI's Capital Week with Laura Bellin and me, Dennis Hart, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. We are here every week at this time to talk about what's been happening in and around the state capitol and what it all means. And we're zooming tonight. We have more to talk about. Interesting story about Ron DeSantis. His team contacted law enforcement to block some reporters from covering a campaign event in Harlan on Friday afternoon.
So this was Iowa Starting Line is a website that does a lot of coverage, Iowa caucus coverage, state government. And Ty Rushing is one of their senior reporters. He's worked for several newspapers before he was working for Iowa Starting Line. And he's very well known in Iowa's journalistic community. And he's covered a lot of presidential candidate events. In fact, I think he's covered at least a half a dozen Ron DeSantis events already. And so it was a big surprise to him. He had already covered an event earlier in the day. And so when he arrived in Shelby County and there were sheriffs deputies keeping him from entering the building, he and or one of his colleagues recorded the interaction and it went absolutely viral. I contacted the Shelby County's Sheriff's Office today and trying to get answers about, were these on duty? Were they off duty? Did the Never Back Down Super PAC or did the DeSantis campaign pay for the security? Or was this like a courtesy thing that somebody called them and asked them to do this? Because that's not a normal role. I mean, it's not that unusual to see security outside an Iowa caucus event, but I've been to a lot of presidential candidate events and I can't recall ever seeing law enforcement keep a journalist outside. And I think the story, it was picked up by a lot of people, even some national coverage. And I think it probably stepped on whatever news Ron DeSantis was trying to make at that event in Harlan.
He didn't have a great week in Iowa last week.
I don't think so. I mean, he's still the best thing that his campaign can say is that they still have a lot of grassroots. They have a grass top support. So the people, the opinion leaders, the state legislators, they still have a lot of support and they have county chairs lined up in all 99 counties, but they have a lot of work on their hands to organize.
He has another chance to reintroduce himself to the public, and that is next week during the GOP televised debate. This may be his last best chance.
Yes, well, I still think there are a lot of people who aren't paying attention, but the problem is that Donald Trump's lead, he has such a prohibitive lead in a lot of the polls that it's just going to be difficult. If Ron DeSantis can't do well in Iowa, it's going to be very difficult to stop Trump's momentum later. And this is very different. I should mention, if anybody remembers the 2008 and 2012 and 2016 Republican campaigns before the caucuses that were very competitive and the polling was very competitive. There were a lot of lead changes. I mean, Scott Walker was up, Ben Carson was up. There were different people. Ted Cruz was up. And so this is very different. We have a very stable race where the only question is Donald Trump leading by 20 points or is he leading by 30 points? And so it puts a lot more pressure on someone like DeSantis to be competitive.
So, Laura, while the Republicans were generating all the publicity last week, the Democrats, Iowa Democratic Party Chair Rita Hart said She could not commit to the party holding its caucuses on January 15, 2024. That's the same day Iowa Republicans plan to hold their party's presidential nominating caucuses. So the Democrats still appear to be in disarray while the Republicans, well, they're getting all the press.
Well, I didn't really understand this because the Iowa Democratic Party already said earlier, before the Republicans announced the date, that they were scheduling, planning to hold their caucus. And by the way, that is still subject to change depending on when New Hampshire schedules their primary, because the Iowa caucus is always 8 days before the New Hampshire primary. But in any case, I mean, the Iowa Democratic Party, in theory, said that they were going to hold in-person caucuses on the same night as Republicans just to do the party business. Then they're going to do the presidential preference by this kind of mail-in process that's not exactly a ballot, but some kind of mail-in process, and they would announce the results at a later time. So I was a little confused when Rita Hart said that she wasn't now committing to that January 15th date. As we've discussed before, it does overlap with a Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday, which is something Democrats had been hoping to avoid. I want to also mention that Rita Hart was at the Iowa State Fair last Friday. I believe she was there with the governor of Minnesota, came down, Tim Walz. There's been a long rivalry between Minnesota and Iowa on who has the best state fair, and they got a little bit of news coverage. But when you have every single day Republican candidates everywhere getting a lot of attention, it's just very difficult for the Democratic Party to make any news.
Believe it or not, there was other news last week besides all those GOP candidates. Here's one story that we need to cover. A longtime ally of Governor Reynolds named to the State Court of Appeals.
Yes, Sam Langholz, this is the third time was a charm for him. He had applied for an Iowa Supreme Court vacancy in 2020, didn't make it onto the short list. There, as you'll recall, we've talked about this before. In Iowa, the governor can't just pick whoever she wants. The State Judicial Nominating Commission interviews candidates and forwards a list of finalists to the governor, and she has to appoint someone from that list. So Sam Langholz had then applied for an Iowa Court of Appeals vacancy. He, again, didn't make it onto the short list. This time he did make it onto the list of five. And everybody I knew in the legal community was absolutely certain. He's the former senior legal counsel for the governor. He was her senior legal counsel during the early months of the pandemic. He then moved over to work in the attorney general's office while Tom Miller was still there. He was involved in a lot of the important litigation related to the mask mandate, the lawsuits that were really important to the governor, for instance, and related to abortion regulations and other things. So, and he had been serving as the first chief deputy attorney general, but he is going to be leaving that to serve on the Court of Appeals.
All right. Brenna Byrd made some news last week. She joined other states' attorney general as part of an investigation into the social media company TikTok. TikTok is in the forefront of, shall we say, anger, distrust because of its ownership, its Chinese ownership. So Iowa's going to look into it.
Yes. And Iowa, while Tom Miller was attorney general, I know that he was very involved in some multi-state litigation and legal actions to deal with other social media companies. I think they were working on trying to get Instagram to change things to reduce use of under teenagers under age 18. But in any case, this was something TikTok is, as you say, something that Republican politicians all over the country are talking about a lot. And it wasn't surprising. Usually when the attorney general joins something like this, she can make a lot of those decisions on her own. But in this case, she needed the approval of Iowa's executive council. And it was a foregone conclusion, of course, that they were going to allow her to join in this multi-state effort.
And one of the stories that we've been covering for a long time since the start of the year is the private school scholarship law that is going to provide public money for private school scholarships. It was passed by the legislature this year. We have talked about this almost every week. Last week, we reported that the state had approved more than 18,000 applications for those education savings accounts. But the Des Moines Register really did a good job on breaking down which counties per capita would be most affected. Take it from there, Laura.
The Register, they really did good reporting. I will say that they're a little bit limited in the data that was released by the state so far is not as complete as it could be. So what they did was they have a map showing in each county how many people have been approved for private school scholarships. But one thing you don't know is how many of those students are already attending private schools. That's really important, because if 3,000 Polk County residents are approved for private schools, but almost all of them already attend private schools, well, the public school districts aren't getting money. They aren't getting that per pupil allowance. But if 500 or 1,000 of them are people who are going to be leaving public school districts to take a position in a private school, that's going to be a big financial hit for school districts. And so Sioux County, which is up in Northwest Iowa, this is the only Iowa county that actually has more private schools than public schools. It's the most Republican county, voting county in the state, and it has the most private schools in the state. So they had almost 1,200 approvals, but again, they already have a lot of private schools. So it could be that their public school districts take a big hit, or it could be that most of the people who are approved are already attending those private schools. Very hard to say. And I hope that the state will be forthcoming with more data later this fall.
And again, what we're looking at is the per capita hit. So Sioux County had 32.8, almost 39%, or 39 people per 100 per 1,000 population in this GOP stronghold being approved for these applications. Carroll County was number two with 23% per 1,000 residents. And that's how we did this. So Sioux, Carroll, Delaware, and Lyon, and then Plymouth County. But as you say, Northwest Iowa really is going to get an impact here.
Yes. So Sioux County traditionally has had a lot of public school, Christian public schools, or private schools rather. Carroll County has a very strong Catholic school system, always has for generations. And so presumably that's where most of the students are going to be attending the Catholic schools. So it is really, but like I said, that the biggest question is how many of these students are actually going to be leaving public school systems to enter private schools. And also, we don't know for a fact that everybody who is approved for an education savings account will actually find a slot at a private school. It could be that the private schools in their area don't have room for them, or it could be that they have some kind of learning disability or medical issue that a lot of private schools won't take students with those conditions.
The state is still looking at applications. They have not come up with a final number of those approved. They had originally estimated that 14,000 kids would apply. It's been far more than that. We talked about this last week, Laura. Again, it's far more. Where will the money come from to pay for this?
Well, at some point, the state is going to have to cough up at least $25 million, if not more than $30 million, depending on how many of these students actually enroll at a private school. That's one of the big question marks. And another thing, this is something I'll be keeping an eye on this fall. The money is released to the private school once the student enrolls there. But if the student, after September 30th, I think the money stays with a private school. And so if a student tries out the private school and it's not working out, and midway through the year or later in the fall, they decide to transfer back to the public school district, the public school district doesn't get that per pupil allotment back. And that's something that a lot of public school administrators are very concerned about.
And one more story. We rarely talk about buildings, but this one's a pretty famous building. The Wallace Building in the Iowa Capitol Complex, it's famous because it has windows that reflect the state capitol, but it also has immense structural and maintenance issues. Well, guess what? The state has decided they're going to replace it.
Yes, it's always been. It's a very commonly photographed building. I know I've used in a lot of pieces that I've written about the Iowa legislature. I've used pictures of the Capitol reflected in those windows, but I've heard it's just a terrible place to work. I mean, there are just a lot of problems, as you say. And I think there were some years when it wasn't that well maintained and those issues pile up. So it turned out to just apparently not be cost effective to try to renovate that building, but it's going to be very sad if it actually is torn down.
And very quickly, the state's going to buy an office building that most recently housed corporate offices for Wells Fargo. It's going to cost $18 million, but that's less than the renovation costs for Wallace.
Yes, the renovation costs, I heard different estimates anywhere from $43 million to possibly up to $70 million if they really did everything that needed to be done there. But it's just sad because, as you say, it is a very iconic building, and losing those windows, that's a view of the Capitol that we won't be able to get back.
Laura, 30 seconds. What are you going to be looking at this week? You're back from vacation. What are you going to be doing?
Well, Iowa State Fair for sure, and continuing to watch. I have a lot of stories that I'm working on from last week. One of them we can talk about it next week when I finish it.
Let's talk about it next week. As of this moment, we're a few seconds away from the end of our broadcast on this Monday night. We have heard no updates from the Georgia grand jury. It's possible tomorrow. It's possible Wednesday. Whatever it happens, we'll be talking about it next Monday night right here on Capital Week, Laura.
Yes, so I'll look forward to it, Dennis.
We are out of time for this edition of this Capital Week. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back here in the same time slot next week. And as usual, we're going to talk about everything interesting or important or even entertaining that takes place in Iowa politics. And as always, we hope you can join us. Thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we value it. Between now and next time, whenever that is, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.